if I'm still alive in half an hour's time, I might do. Working now. Very good. So now I can work. That's very high tech. Very good. So this is a nice little talk for this retreat. But please don't be concerned, there's always another retreat sometime soon. My life is always in retreat. Never any advances, just in retreat. Which is a wonderful thing about the whole word retreat. It means you don't go and attain more things, you don't go forward. You go backwards to the source of all things, to the origin. That's why it's called retreat, not advance. Today we're just going to, the plan is, whether it works I don't know, because I don't keep plans. So what's going to happen is just a little talk to sum up the retreat, and I think we'll be about 8:45. If conditions are right, I'll lead a loving-kindness meditation for about half an hour, and we'll finish off at 9:15. I'll give a blessing and a sharing of merits. That's right, Peter, isn't it? 9:15. Michelle's coming in.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Peter is going to say a few words. And 9:30, it is paparazzi time. I don't know why people want to take a photograph of me. I'm not as cute as Justin Bieber. maybe when I was his age I was. But not these days. I'm old, I'm fat, I'm losing everything. It's really strange, you know, when you wanted sort of girls to like you and take photographs with you, they never did. Now you don't care. They all want to. Anyway, so that's going to be about 9:30. But when we do have the photos, please all come together. Because I always have to wait for one person. And the one person has to go to toilet. So don't go to toilet. Get a rubber band or plug it up or do something. You can go later on. It's called restraint. There is a time for letting go. And there's a time for not letting go. So we can do the photos. And the other thing, Peter, I know that everyone now has their own smartphones and everyone has a camera. And imagine, how many people in this room? All having to do one shot. So let's do, instead of everyone doing their own shot, do one or two shots. And you can email each other. And that's much nicer than always running up and down with this camera and that camera. Sometimes I feel so sorry for the photographers. They've got about 20 cameras all around them, one in here and one in there. So just a couple of cameras, official shots, so we can email to everybody. Very good. Okay, here's your friends. So, that's about right? Very good. Okay. And that's at 10 o'clock. Is that, what time is the cleaning announcement? 10 o'clock. Yes. Okay. So after you've had your photograph taken, please, want to do that in the kitchen or? Okay, so after the photos, everyone comes up here for the cleaning announcement, which is really, 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 really important.
And the departure
announcement. And the? Checking and departure announcements. Anything else? Okay. Actually, to save time, when you get on the aircraft, you can give the safety announcement here. And then you don't have to do it when you're on the plane. Okay. You just go on the plane and say, I've already heard that from a captain. So anyhow, so back to what we've been doing here. The retreat you've been doing now. Some people have done a lot of meditation, got very deep. Some are just beginning and just getting started. And I know that for some of you, thank you for all those deep talks. They really helped when I was in my nimitta state. And others, nimittas, I can't even watch the breath for 1 minute, let alone getting nimittas. and you get quite depressed. But you ask the ones, you know, who had good meditation, they all started at the same place. They all started just trying to get the mind still and peaceful. And I don't mind teaching at a high level, because it does actually pull everybody a little bit further than they would otherwise have gone. If you teach at a low level, then that's all you're going to get from people. It's just low results. Teach at a higher level, even the beginners, they go a little bit deeper than they would otherwise do. So please never get frustrated and depressed and say, no, I didn't get anything on this retreat. As I mentioned at the very start, this retreat is not to get things, but to lose things. So if you ask each other afterwards, you know, when you can start speaking again, because none of you have been speaking for 9 days. So, when you talk to each other, don't say, how far did you get? Don't ask, what did you achieve? Don't say, what stage of meditation or insight did you attain this time? Just ask each other, how much did you lose? And how much did you lose? Oh, I lost a lot. Yeah, I lost a lot too. I don't think that's possible. I said this morning, when you go back to Singapore, weigh yourselves and see if you have lost anything. I mean, lost defilements, not losing weight. Because you can expect to gain weight here. The reason is because, you know, you don't worry. People say if you worry a lot, you know, you really get thinner and thinner. Have you seen people with really anxiety, they're really stressed out, and they get really thinner and thinner and thinner because the metabolism burns up everything, they've got nothing left. So because there's no stress here at all, nothing to worry about, nothing to do, of course you put on weight. That's why I put on weight. I've got no stress in life. You know, I need more stress. If I get more stress and I get thinner and thinner and thinner, I lose weight. Not like you guys. So you'd expect to lose, to put on some weight when you're, you know, when you're on holidays. It's because you're not worrying so much. It's incredible how much worry burns up energy inside of you. And you see sometimes people who get really, really into terrible situations and they get thinner and thinner and thinner just through worry, not being able to sleep at night, being stressed out, and all the physical problems come from that. So here, you know, you get put on a little bit of weight. But it's also, you have a lot of happiness as well, a lot of freedom. Stress-free environment. And one thing I will say is when you do go out, you go to the airport, and you get on the plane, you go back to Singapore, one thing I ask you to notice is just how crazy it is out there. You don't realize how much you've slowed down and how peaceful you have become. Because you've all gone on the same journey. You've all been getting more and more peaceful together, and it's been a very small incremental journey. And so now you get a way of judging by comparing to ordinary people. So when you go to the airport this afternoon or tomorrow, and you see all those people running around, you think, wow, this is crazy stuff. Remember, that was you when you came here. And now you slow down more and become more peaceful. And that gives you a lot of encouragement. For those people who come on retreat and some of my retreats in their cars, I always encourage them, don't just get in your car and drive down the road and go home. Do a couple of laps of the car park first of all. Because I noticed in some of the retreats I did in town, some of, you know, the best drivers started having accidents when they left the retreat. They were just so cool when they were driving down the road. Someone would pull in front of them. They couldn't react fast enough. They're just too mindful. Car pulling up in front of me, bang, bang. We're letting go too much. So, you know, you have to start ratcheting up the gears, you know, when you start to leave here. Oh, it's like some people on the retreat, you know, you arrive at the airport late, or there's queues for immigration. And they start calling your name. You know, it's B2CO, come, the plane's waiting for you. And you're walking very mindfully, and you just can't go fast. Oh my goodness. So you have slowed down a lot, and you'll be able to notice that. And also that, you know, you've let go of a lot of stuff. You know, it's not just learning how to be peaceful, learning how to be still, blissing out in nimittas and jhanas. It's also, you've noticed, many of the obstacles, you know, which you have to attain those things. All the thoughts and worries and fears which you have. And those obstacles are places where you get great insights. What you get here, you use when you get back to work or back home. You know, very, very simple things about, well, the past is gone, the meditation this morning is not the same as the meditation this afternoon. And many of you may have noticed you had a terrible meditation. The next meditation is a beautiful one. You know, the past does not control the present. And you can flip it straight away. And the same, the future is so uncertain. All your past, even the present, doesn't really influence the future unless you let it. You may have a very difficult situation, an unpleasant experience. You don't need to carry it too far into the future. And I've seen many, many times, because I said it was school holidays, many kids have been coming to the monastery where I've been having lunch, and maybe you may have seen them playing around, and every now and again somebody gets hit or someone falls over, and the kid crying their eyes out as if it was the end of the world. And 1 minute later, big smile on their face, laughing and playing with the person who punched them, holding nothing from the past at all. And I love those examples of kids, how easy they can let go. Yeah, they're crying their eyes out 1 minute, and the next minute they're smiling, happy, playful. Oh, if only we could do that. Now, somebody tells us off, they shout at us, yeah, you can cry, and the next minute you're laughing again. It means you don't hold the past, and you don't allow whatever happened in the past to affect the present. And that's one of the trainings we've done here, to learn how to be in this present moment. As I mentioned in an earlier talk, you become, so you recognize it first of all, you get familiar with it, and with more and more familiarity, you can stay in there because you're at ease with it. And what you do here with the present moment, you can do back in Singapore, wherever you happen to be. Because there are sometimes, one of the questions you will ask me is, what can I do when I get back to Singapore? It's such a busy life, I don't have time to meditate. And sometimes the same is with me. I have a busy life sometimes. And I noticed many years ago how much time I did waste. And I developed the concept of the in-between moments of your life. And those in-between moments of your life are huge. The time when you finish your meditation here and you're going walking to the kitchen for lunch. That's an in-between moment. You think you're not doing anything, it's not important. You know, you've forgotten your meditation and you're just thinking about the lunch. And those in-between moments of life, if you can recognize them and use them, there's many, 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 many opportunities for meditation. You can be in the car, in a traffic jam, or a red traffic light at an intersection. You've got 30 seconds, a minute or something. You can't go forward, you can't go back. So what should you do? Just be here. Be in the present moment. You don't have to worry about the traffic. You don't have to stress out about cars turning in, turning out. You can just relax and be. It's an in-between moment of your life. You're in the airport, and you're in the aircraft cockpit. You checked all the instruments. You haven't got permission yet to take off. Enjoy. Relax. Because a lot of times we worry, where are they going to tell us to leave? When are they going to tell us to leave? And we sacrifice so many in-between moments of life. You may be waiting the doctor's surgery for your appointment at the hospital, sitting down. That's another in-between moment. Just collect yourself, be in the present moment, and just enjoy. I don't know, when you go to the airport, some of you are going on the cheap airlines, Scoot, or whatever you're going on. It'll be delayed. It's always delayed. That's why it's cheap. So what do you do when it's delayed? More in-between moments. Times, instead of getting worried or frustrated or angry, you just come into the present moment and look at those in-between moments as gifts where you can meditate and just relax and be peaceful. If you can do that, you'll find there are so many of these in-between moments of life. If we notice them, grab them, then we have plenty of time to develop our mind in meditation. What I'm saying is we waste far too many opportunities in our life, the in-between moments of your life. And in fact, if you look very carefully, there's more in-between moments than anything else in your life. You're always in between things. You've left one thing, you're going to another, you're in between. And if you can recognize those moments, it's not the attainment, it's not where you come from, it's not your destination. Life is all about the in-between moments of your life. That's where life happens. Recognize those, enjoy them, and make them beautiful in-between moments. So nothing is ever wasted. Then you find something strange. You've got plenty of time to get your jobs done. Plenty of time for meditation. Plenty of time for rest. But of course people say, well, we can't do too much sitting down meditation, you know, when we're in the cockpit. Otherwise our co-pilot would say, what are you doing? Come out of jhana, we're taking off now. That's not a nimitta, that's another plane heading towards us. So, there are times when you've got to turn away from the meditation and do the job at hand. Because people are asking me, when we do drive home, what should we be watching? Should we be watching our breath when I'm driving through the traffic? Breathing in. Should we be watching the feelings of our hands on the steering wheel? When you're driving, you should be watching the traffic. That should be the focus of your attention. So here, you learn to do what's the most important thing. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. When there's something to do, like driving, like going to your work, then give it everything you've got. It's one of Ajahn Chah's beautiful teachings, which no one else knew until I heard it here from a person from Sydney. This was the story where this fellow went all the way to Wat Pa Phong in Thailand. Because, you know, he heard Ajahn Chah was very famous and he wanted to get his questions answered by a really good monk. And he went all that way just to see the great master, nothing else. Not to tour around, you know, not to buy presents, but just fly Sydney to Bangkok and Bangkok to Ubon to see Ajahn Chah and then on the next plane home. And when he got there, he found that Ajahn Chah was so busy, surrounded by so many people, no way could he speak to him. And it was just around there, people were sitting around asking questions, and some of the questions they were asked were not really important. You know what people, they just like to hang out with monks and nuns. And monks and nuns like to hang out with themselves in silence. But there was Ajahn Chah talking to people, answering their questions. And after a couple of hours of waiting for his turn, he was getting no closer. So this poor man from Sydney got up and left. No way would he be able to ask his questions, even though he came for such a long distance. But it happened that the monks were doing some chores around the monastery. They were sweeping. So he decided, now his taxi wasn't due for another hour, so he decided to pick up a broom and at least do some good karma. So when you pick up a broom and do some good karma, when you clean out your huts, when you do extra work to make sure that your rooms and cottages are spotless and the kitchen is nice, even if it's not your job aside, but you do it anyway. When you make such good karma, everything wonderful happens to you. And what happened to him, he was busy sweeping and making some good karma. He told me he felt a hand on his shoulder. And he looked around, and that hand belonged to Ajahn Chah. The sort of thing Ajahn Chah would do. He was very aware, and he could see that people were around and could not get to him. So that he got up to talk to this man. And as he talked to this man through an interpreter, like most of the stuff Ajahn Chah said, it wasn't a talk for an hour, it was just one-liners which were far better than a whole talk. You know, like what he said to me, you know, about you'll either get better or you'll die. And that's just so profound. You know what he said about, you know, why? There's nothing. Do you understand? No, you don't. Those things, they stay with you. You remember those much more than any, you know, one-hour talks. And so they're amazing. What he said to this man was, if you're going to sweep, give it everything you've got. And then Ajahn Chah went away. And this fellow realized that this was saying from a great master. It was not just, you know, make sure you work hard. That's what your bosses say, and they're not enlightened. So what it actually said, you know, to him, you know, if you're sweeping, give it everything you've got. This fellow contemplated, what does that mean? When he went into the taxi, when he got on the aircraft, the long journey home, thinking about it all the time, what does it mean? And he realized what it meant was, if you're meditating, just give meditating everything you've got, 100%. You don't think about your work or your lunch. When you're working at the office, you give it 100%. You don't think about meditation. If you're working at your job, you don't think about the BF. You don't think about your kids. You just 100% on your work. When it's lunchtime, you don't think about the work or the meditation, 100% on your lunch. Give lunch everything you've got. I think you've done that one already. You're good at that. When it comes to resting at night, give sleep everything you've got. So in other words, you don't worry about the work, you don't worry about the family, you don't worry about the meditation. Sleep time, 100%, just on sleep, nothing else. And your family, when you're with your wife, he was married, or your kids, give the family everything you've got, 100%. Don't think about your work or something else. And that's actually became his philosophy of life. It was 2 or 3 years after that experience with Ajahn Chah, he came to see me here because he knew I was a disciple. He came up to me and said, that was the best teaching I've ever, ever received from anyone. I've got this beautiful relationship with my wife and my family, and I've become a millionaire. His business really flourished, really sort of healthy, rest well at night, good meditation. He said just a simple teaching like that just was all he needed for his life. Whatever you do, give it 100%. So this is what you hear here. Just in this present moment, this is really important. Give it all your attention. Don't want anything more. Just this is all you have. Give it 100%. Not only will you have great meditation, excellent health, brilliant business, relationships really work, everything works. Just like for me, I've got a very successful business, the monk business, and then I've expanded to nun business. I've got many franchises overseas. My brand is becoming more well known. And you've got very good relationships with so many people, even with people of other religions here in Perth. Last, I think, was it August or September? I think it was September. Just the dean of the local cathedral in Perth, St. George's Cathedral in Perth. He was retiring. You know, it was his time to retire. So, you know, he invited me to his retirement ceremony. And all the bishops and the archbishops were there. All the Anglican Christians were there. And right in the front pew was Ajahn Brahm in brown. Probably the only non-Christian there. They put me in the front pew, sitting next to one of the ministers. And the archbishop, he used to be from Sri Lanka. So, you know, he knows about Buddhism. And so, you know, I spoke Buddhism to him, Telwan Saranai, and he forgot himself. He paid respects to me. Archbishop can't do that. And I did it back to him. And we just laughed and just, he said, get away. You know, I'm cheeky. I always try and play tricks on people and make them funny. And that's, you know, the Anglican Archbishop here, and all the bishops were there as well. And I was invited there because I was a mate, a friend. So, you know, you can make these beautiful friendships with the opposition. With others. And I'm really proud of that. You know, to be able to sort of make those bridges between others. And this is what you can do. You got very successful. Why? It's because I think you've seen me a long time, many of you. I do put energy into whatever I do. Whatever I do, I give it 100%. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's what that is all about. And you know what it's like? That's so symbolic, you know, of some people's attitude. You know, last night, the first talk at Nolamara after being away for a while. After I finished my talk, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's really depressing. So I told them, stop, try again, remember, because it's been 3 months since I've given a talk there, and they all did the three big sadhus and left with a big grin and smile on their face. Isn't that just important, to be able to learn how to put 100% into whatever you do? And if you haven't done that yet, I did suggest this, but then I thought, no, I better not go further here. When you get up in the morning, put 100% energy into getting up. Jump out of bed, zippity-doo-dah, what a lovely day. I stopped going further with that because I knew you were in a cottage with thin walls. And everyone else would come and complain, Ajahn Bob, please don't tell her to do that. She gets up at 4 o'clock. Zippity-doo-dah, it's driving me mad. And be careful, if you're married, don't do it. You'll get divorced. My husband, he jumps up every morning, zippity-doo-dah stuff. That's grounds for divorce. But, you know, you can jump up in the morning. And it's what Ajahn Chah taught me. He said, when you wake up in the morning, don't just roll over and look at the clock with one eye and think, oh. Not with two eyes, you're too lazy for that. It's only sort of 10 to 5, I've got another 10 minutes. They never do that, because if you start your day like that, the whole day is tired and depressing. So getting up, you give it everything you've got, you jump up. It's amazing how that changes your day. You know, you put energy in the beginning, you start off, you know, really strong, and it's strong all the way through. And whatever you have to do in life. Some people said, oh, but you'll get tired. You put so much energy into getting up in the morning, by the time you go to work, you'll be tired out. And it doesn't work that way. When you put energy into things, it makes energy. It creates more energy. And you find you're an energetic person. You know, an energetic person, you're so happy. You get lots done. Career goes really well. Life goes really well. You enjoy your life. And it's also, you're not one of these depressed people, always negative. You're negative, they say, because you got off on the wrong side of the bed in the morning. Negative, oh, I don't want to go to work. What's it all about? I don't want to help with the BF. You know what BF means? It's got another meaning. Same as the Buddhist society, it's got another meaning. BS. When you're negative, you can get into that sort of stuff. And that ruins your whole day, that ruins other people's days, and it's not necessary. So instead you put energy in, and then straight away you have a positive attitude in the morning. Remember what I said, anyone who ever gets depressed or sick, fed up, disappointed, what did you do? Push-ups. That's right, 20 push-ups with your mouth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In front of the mirror. Anything which gives energy and happiness is brilliant. Now that means you're putting energy into the moment, energy into your life. I give energy into my retreats, doing stupid things, you know, like prizes. I should say there will be a prize ceremony today for the best meditators. And I'm happy to announce that it's two meditators, I cannot distinguish between them. They're so excellent that they've kept noble silence. They really have. Everyone else, you've all talked. These two are the only two who kept noble silence. And they sat perfectly still. They haven't even slept all night. The two teddy bears. Look how peaceful they are. Look how happy they are. Hasn't stopped smiling since you came here. So I wore the happiness prizes to mummy and baby teddy bear. But when you put energy and effort into that, it's also good fun as well. Have you ever noticed energetic people can be happy and crack jokes? And I've seen this sometimes. Sometimes I really, really, really do try hard to try and encourage people and uplift them, make them happy so they've got energy. And sometimes I tell these jokes to people. I mean, really funny jokes. And they look at me. Yeah? And they haven't heard it before. They just go, yeah. It's impossible to make them smile. They resist it. They say, come on, you come and smile. Come, 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 come. And they can't do it. Those are people that are very difficult to work with. And they get depressed, they get sick, they can't have a relationship. You know, so often with young people, I ask them years and years and years ago, I think the first time was in KL, and say, you know, number one, what would you like for your partner in life? So, you know, to make me happy, to be fun, to be around, to be joyful. That's what people want from a partner. So if you haven't got a partner yet, just learn a few jokes, start laughing a lot. And then you'll be a funny person. And you like to be around a funny person. So anyway, that shows how you put energy into your life and you become very, very successful. And the other teaching, I mentioned it in passing, emphasize it now because again, how can you meditate in your daily life? Remember, I think I said this, emphasized it in interview time to a couple of people. It's my little story of the Emperor's three questions, not the Emperor's ring, the three questions story. It's over in in Open the Door of Your Heart. But I read this, I remember reading it for the first time as a student, you know, in university. I got a book of short stories. It's interesting, it was written to raise money for the Jewish community in Imperial Russia. They were being discriminated against, and all of these luminaries like Chekhov, and I know he did a story, and also Tolstoy, who did this story, were asked to write some short stories in this book, which will be sold to raise funds for people being discriminated against. And even though none of these authors were Jewish, they thought these people are being given too hard a time, we want to support them. And so this is where Tolstoy, he wrote this Emperor's Three Questions story. And I remember reading it amongst all the other stories and it really stood out. In fact, it blew me away, as they say. Because all about this emperor, it's almost like a modern story. A person who'd had enough with religion, always fighting each other, arguing with each other, you know, even in the committees having difficulties. It's normal stuff. It happens everywhere. There's nothing wrong with the BF or the BSWA or whatever, the Catholic Church. You know, it's the nature of people to have different ideas and different ways of looking at things. And also arguing who's right and who's wrong. That is the one thing which the Buddha saw. He said, when you think that I'm right and she's wrong, then you are wrong, whether she's right or not. We all have these different ways of looking at life. The wonderful simile of the elephant, you know, which you all know. If you don't know it, you should do. Different blind men looking at different parts of the elephant and all being absolutely true because they had direct experience of feeling an elephant, what an elephant was. You know that story? Did you know the story of the seven blind elephants? It was a similar story. It was based on the story of the seven blind men and the elephants. The seven blind elephants heard this thing called man, man, man. But they'd never seen a man because they'd been blind. So they said, what is a man? They started arguing what a man is. Because they had no experience of it. Like people argue about what Nibbana is. They had no experience of it. So these seven blind elephants were arguing about what a man is. And they heard about this story about how blind men couldn't understand what an elephant was. So they thought, that's how we should find out what a man is. We all find a man each. We feel the man. And then we come back together and compare our experiences. So the blind elephants all went out, they found a man each, they felt the man. And when they came back, when they compared their experience of what a man is, they all agreed, a man is flat. There you go, you got that straight away. So, but the idea, I'm right, you wrong. So instead of doing that, you know, these organized religions were always arguing who's right and who's wrong. And even within a religion, who's right and who's wrong? Which tradition is right, which is wrong? Which meditation method is right, which is wrong? Which monk is right, which is wrong? I'll tell you the answer, I'm right. Because we always think we're right. But the emperor decided, okay, I'll make up my own religion. And we call that in Singapore free thinkers. You know, they make up their own philosophy. That's what they call themselves, free thinkers. So you make up your own philosophy, a bit of this, a bit of that, and all over the place. And so he decided, okay, my own philosophy, and I want a religion, or a philosophy, a spirituality, which is not only, you know, satisfies the answers to the deepest questions of existence, but also has to be practical. You know, I'm a king. I have to work, I have to make decisions. So I want a philosophy which I can use in my life to make my life easier. And that's what people want these days. They don't want a religion, they just, you know, do some chanting in a temple or, you know, do some singing in a church. And it doesn't really help solve the problems of, you know, abortion or living with another human being in a marriage or having kids and what you're supposed to do with these kids and dealing with sicknesses and all these other things. You want a religion which you can use outside of the church or temple. So that was his requirements. Something which was profound, answers deep questions, but also something which you could use in real life. And eventually, he came up with only three things you need to know the answers for in life. And it became the Emperor's Three Questions. And in this story, you know, Tolstoy told a long yarn of the Emperor going here and going there and getting disappointed every time. And eventually, finding the answers, as usual, from a small boy, from the most unexpected places. So that's where you always find insights, from unexpected experiences of life, you know, which you never planned. Not through books, not through lectures. You're going home on the aircraft, something happens. Wow, now I understand. That's always where great insights come from. But the answers to the three questions, when is the most important time? That's always the easiest one, it's now. You know that, don't you? Do you practice it? Intellectually, we know. But emotionally, the past is more important. What that person did to me. And you keep thinking about it. They shouldn't have done that. How am I going to fix that? And what I did 10 years ago, that becomes more important in the present moment. You know, the abortion, the cheating of somebody, you know, you cheated on your wife, you know, you stole something or whatever you did which you're really ashamed of, you sold an encyclopedia to a poor family. And that past becomes more important than the present. So we're not really practicing it. The future! When are you going to leave? Who knows? We may get a call that there's been a terrorist attack on Perth Airport. The airport is closed. It won't be open again for another week. Unpack your bags. Because the future is uncertain like that. You never know what's going to happen. You know, good, bad, who knows? I remember this guy coming and telling me this story, and it was a brilliant tale. All these stories I tell about, some I make up myself, but some are real life, which actually happened. He was in Mumbai doing business, got in his taxi to take him to the airport, as some of you will, in plenty of time. Taxi got lost. You know, if your car doesn't get lost, sometimes it breaks down. That happened to me a couple of years ago. I was going to Los Angeles after the Katrina, just like I'm going to do on Sunday. And halfway, no, actually not even halfway, in the middle of nowhere, the car broke down. The fan belt wasn't working. It was an electrical fault, we found out later. And it started overheating. You know, the needle went up and up and up. We had to stop, we'd explode. And there I was, it was about 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. My flight was about 3 o'clock or something. I was stuck. Oh my goodness. Bye-bye, Los Angeles. And all these people were waiting for me there. Big crowds, thousands of people waiting for me. And oh, what should I do? Oh, never mind. And of course, it's always something unexpected happens. You know, it's just like a farmer was coming back, you know, and she saw her and says, oh, I can take you to the airport. And it's marvelous when people help out like this, because if it's in the place where there's no sort of phones or no one you can actually call, you know, in the outback community, people are always really helpful. So what you lose, you know, with no mobile phone contact, you actually gain by the friendliness and the helpfulness of local neighbours. It's just like when, I said a couple of years ago, when a couple of you went walking, oh crikey, went walking up somewhere and got lost, the local neighbour actually drove you back. They were always helpful like that, and they really enjoyed that. They were laughing their heads off, because it's not that far, it's a 10-minute walk from where they got lost. But he drove them back the long way around to make them feel good that they weren't that badly. So anyway, so empathy questions, now the most important time. The most important person you're with, the most important person is the one you're with. Now, it's not just a person, it's the work you're doing for your company. What's on your computer screen right now, the job at hand, that is the most important thing in the world. Give it importance. Don't try and get rid of it to do something else. Because just trying to get rid of it to do something else, you're not giving it 100% attention. You're not actually doing the very best work you possibly can. The same way when you're meditating, trying to get rid of this, say, breath to get the delightful breath, you'll never achieve that because you're going about it the wrong way. Be with the beautiful, the ordinary breath. That's the most important thing in the world for you. And then the delightful breath will come by itself. And that very simple story, I apply that in my own meditation. I apply that in my life. I don't care what I'm going to do later on. Right now, this talk is the most important thing in the whole world to me. Doesn't matter what's happening next. When you can do that, you become very successful. You are in the moment giving everything you've got just to this one thing. And the last part of the three questions, what's the most important thing to do? You know, it was to care. And that's where we go back to my story about the doctor who got depressed when his first patient died. He wanted to give up and start a new career, and I told him, no, you haven't failed, because your job as a doctor is not to cure people. That's not your job. Your job is to care for people. Just change the whole perception of being a doctor. Because if it's to cure, number one, you'll fail many times. And number two, you will have these very uncomfortable interventions when someone is dying, trying everything, even though it is just so unpleasant for the sufferer, trying to keep them alive. It's cure at all costs in many hospitals. And that curing, those interventions at all costs, you've seen them, hopefully you never had to endure them. Those interventions are abandoning caring. Your prime concern is not to care for the person. Your prime concern is to cure them. And that's why you do all these incredible, unpleasant, unnecessary interventions. Imagine in the emergency room if they change the culture from curing to caring. There's a being in there with feelings, not a body which has to be kept alive at all costs. Care for it. And then you find if it's caring, which is number one priority, not curing. If you do die, you die being cared for. What a wonderful way to go. Thank you so much. And also, you know, if you're cared for, the cure rate goes up. You win both ways. The power of care, of kindness, is enormous. It's an enormous therapeutical thing. It's one of the reasons why there were nurses in the early days which became very successful. Nurses now just become medical assistants. They've lost the opportunity, the time to care for people. But in the old days, except for the nurses in Thailand, it's terrible. the other nurses, you know, they care for you, they sit next to you and they talk to you and whatever it is, and they're kind. And that is so helpful to cure you, whatever you're doing. So the most important thing for a doctor, for a nurse, for a counsellor, is not to cure people, but to care for them. The most important thing of a wife is not to cure the husband of all his bad habits, is to care for them. Changes the whole idea. The most important thing with your body is not to cure it, but to care for it. And the cure comes, and you have a much better time. The most important thing when you have any state of meditation is not to cure it and make it better, is to care for it. Sloth and torpor, I've got to cure it. Thinking, I've got to cure it. Oh, that's wrong. You care for it. And then the thinking stops, problem solved. And if it doesn't stop, it's not a problem anymore, because you're caring. Now you can see those Emperor's Three Questions apply to meditation. They apply to life. They actually apply to everything. You're lying in bed at night, you can't sleep. Don't try and cure your insomnia. Care for it instead. When you care for the insomnia, you go to sleep pretty quickly. So much of life, the problems can be solved with such a simple philosophy. Now is the only time you have. Whatever is in front of you is the most important. And the only thing you need to do in life is to care. Don't try and cure. You see the beautiful trees outside, don't try and cure them of their crookedness. Don't try and cure them of having brown leaves and yellow leaves. They're beautiful. Don't try and cure them. Care for them. Imagine if we got a machine to try and straighten out all the trees, to try and replant the branches so they're nice and evenly spaced in a mathematical progression. Would that work? Imagine where all the bricks in the wall, any crooked ones, we could actually have a machine to bend them this way and bend them that way so they're all perfectly straight. And any window, you know, which is a bit leaning to this way, we can actually make it straight again. Isn't that what you do in Singapore? Any leaf which has fallen on the ground, pick it up, clean it up. Any dirt on the tires of the trucks, wash it off. Okay, there's something to that, but remember, caring is more important than curing. To have a happy society rather than curing all the problems. Problems are part of life. Trees are crooked. People say stupid things. They do selfish things. That's like a crooked tree. That's what they're like. Don't try and cure them. Care for them. And hopefully for the last 8 days, I haven't been trying to cure you of all your bad habits, like talking too much, eating too much, having biscuits or other stuff in your rooms. I haven't tried to cure that at all. Caring for you. And that's why the meditation works. So remember this simple teaching. And whatever you're doing, everything you've got, this is the most important time, caring for things. And you find that that is how you take the meditation back into your life. And it becomes seamless. Meditating, working, pretty much all the same, because the attitude's the same. And you find you have a very happy, healthy life. And you never again ask the question, well, what do I do when I get home? Same as you're doing here. Whatever is that you're up to right now, the most important. Letting go of all the past and future. Now's the most important time. Caring, in giving everything you've got. Remember the in-between moments of life, which is now. And then you have a beautiful life. You'll be so happy, so peaceful. You will never, ever need to come back to Jhana Grove again. And then I can retire and have a nice, peaceful old age. Can I? Ah, that's always say the job of a teacher. The job of a teacher is to get rid of their disciples. That is. Now, how many years have you been coming here, Claire?
Many years.
How many? 10, 20? I don't know. Imagine that I was a school teacher in a Singapore school and my class kept coming back again and again and again. Year six, they were in here for 6 years, always coming back to the same lesson. I'd get the sack. I'm not an efficient good teacher. If I was really a good teacher, I'd get rid of you all. It's so enlightened, you never need to come back again. That's why I'm terrible. I'm hopeless. Good enough, he said. Okay, never mind. So anyway, what we're going to do now is a quick loving kindness meditation, guided, for it's now going to be 18 minutes. So before we go, out of kindness to you, please stand up.
Stretch. Oh. And as you move.